Good morning. Welcome to the Bikecast. It's a lovely July day, July 6th, 2010. Today, I wanted to talk about a tactic. We're coming off of the From Here to There series, so maybe my mind is still in that mode. This isn't really a From Here to There thing. It's just highlighting something that I think is extremely helpful, and the more that it can be brought to bear on power, the better it will be for the powerless. It gives some amount of power to the powerless. And I'm talking about surveillance. I think we usually associate surveillance as a tool of oppression, and rightly so, because the surveillance done currently, and surveillance in the popular imagination, is state surveillance, and it is growing and spreading and becoming more pervasive, and that's a cause for concern, for sure. But it isn't the watching that is fundamentally problematic. It is the watchers who themselves refuse to be watched, which is a nice segue to the aspect of surveillance that I wanted to talk about, which is citizen surveillance or subject surveillance of the powerful, of the state, of the police, of the military. There's definitely a narrative, and it rings true, that the presentation of the Vietnam War to Americans on television led to a hastier rise in unpopularity. So I don't know if that's actually true, but seeing the effects of war, seeing the destruction brought upon the Vietnamese people and the American soldiers, made something that otherwise would be mostly propaganda pieces in the newspaper come alive and become something that could be, that struck deep at the human emotions. And there is something about that visual component that makes something far more real. I think for sighted individuals, our entire conceptual base grounds out in the visual sensation. And so it's not terribly surprising that visual media have more punch than written media or even radio. An example where the narrative is that media in general, I think in this case, but visual media and the internet played a role in protecting the powerless from the powerful was the rebellion in Chiapas in the early 90s, I guess. I had a friend who actually wrote his, I can't remember what it was called, but his entire college program there. He had to do a single project. And he did his project on the Zapatista movement and the internet. And later on, I came across a documentary that I watched that covered the same, I didn't say covered the same, it had the same thrust, which was this was the Zapatista movement would have easily been crushed, except that it was known. I mean, how many uprisings by indigenous people or by especially poor indigenous people, if there's any other kind, are crushed, and especially in South and Central America in the last 100 years, 200 years, have been crushed without anyone even knowing it. So the genius of the Zapatista movement is that they invited the international media in as soon as possible, right off the bat, and invited them to stay. And so not only were people aware that this group of people existed and that they were peacefully opposing, that they were peacefully seceding from the Mexican state, but also they were there with cameras rolling and firing out news reports to the internet for global distribution when paramilitaries would attack a village in Chiapas. They were able to bear witness to who was aggressing against whom and report these facts. I think that on the radical left, this tactic is already accepted. I am acquainted with a person who was in Central America, Colombia, I think. And essentially, it was a mini version of the model from Chiapas. But I think actually it's probably a combination of being an outside observer to the conflict crossed with being an American. And I don't actually know, now that I think about it, if any media was involved. But simply the threat of media, the threat of exposure that would certainly ensue should a couple of Americans vanish, whose presence was announced and known by non-governmental organizations, kept the peace in this village, kept this group of non-combatants from being aggressed against by either side in a conflict. Now, transitioning more specifically to visual media, and again, there's probably better previous examples, but the first time I think I can remember something like this happening or it being important was the Rodney King beating. As we get more towards this relevant set of examples, I'm going to start the drumbeat for these incidents that are caught on tape have been, are, and will be going on all the time. It doesn't happen to be just a wild coincidence that eight policemen beat the shit out of some victim coincidentally the one time that someone happens to have a 45-pound brick camcorder in their car to expose the brutality to the outside world. These things happened all the time, and they still happen all the time. It's just that now they're being, one, caught on tape, and two, exposed. To continue, Rodney King is caught by, I don't remember, 6 or 8 cops, 10, and savagely beaten, electroshocked, and so on and so forth for some tremendous period of time. And this is probably fairly standard treatment for people who piss off the LAPD, or cops in general. But this time, it was the early 90s, I guess, I think, this time someone happened to catch it on tape and then distribute the tape. And people finally got to see what it means when they see in the paper, you know, victim alleges police abuse, police deny all involvement, police chiefs clears deputies, you know, blah, blah, everything is fine and goes on as normal. When you read that piece of text, it's easy to read right over. When you see that happen, when you see the actual event that is caught in the text, it makes clear that the media report is pretty sorely lacking in evocative detail. Well, since then, or I should say in current times, police brutality is caught on film everywhere, every day, because there are, well, obviously a proliferation of devices that can take film, or I guess take movies, and there are a proliferation of websites or outlets that these movies can be posted on and viewed and rated and voted up and down. And I think for a long time, just like soldiers, if you were to say there's something wrong with the way police do things, you bump into, especially among older people, when I say older, I mean people who aren't currently in high school, people who came to, who reached adulthood before social networking and YouTube, etc. I think largely this population imagines that police violence is sporadic and usually directed at people who deserve it, and so forth. But I think this sentiment is giving way, both in that population I just mentioned, the adult population, and the younger population has no illusions at all, because they are aware of these mounds and mounds of recorded evidence clearly showing widespread, pervasive, systematic police abuse in the United States. As the propaganda of the pre-media age, or I'm not sure what to call it, maybe the pre-smartphone age, but as the sentiments from that age decay in the face of evidence, police and other government agents will have to start behaving in the way that the military have been behaving since Vietnam, which is to radically restrict the flow of information from the areas where their agents are active, beating the shit out of people or killing them, and the sources of the funding being the tax livestock, also known as subjects or citizens. And I think this is how it came up for me. We are already starting to see this. There are people who now realize the value of taping every police encounter they see, and the police, obviously, do not like to be taped when they're interacting with subjects. Now, the police narrative is, or the state narrative, is that they feel threatened when they're taped, that your law enforcement must feel safe in their private life if they're going to be able to carry out their duties impartially. And that's why when they storm people's houses, or nowadays, even when they're just at an event, providing police protection, quote-unquote, they wear ski masks and helmets, sunglasses, all of these things to provide them with the proper screening of their identity so that they can perform their job in an impartial manner. Now, the non-statist narrative is, of course, that anonymity allows a much wider range of abuse vis-a-vis other humans. And there would be reprisals insofar as once you're known to be a person who beats his fellow citizens or tortures or kills them, you probably experience some cooled relations in the rest of your life. Sadly, not many. I don't imagine. I guess pretty much anyone will write a blank check for any amount of violence from a policeman or a soldier. But some people will start to back off from you. Some people will not enjoy interacting with you. And so anonymity is important. And so back to the original point, and this is why, now that people are consciously using cameras to catch these events, to hold these criminals accountable, and by criminals I mean the police in this case, they are actually using federal wiretapping laws, and a number of states are passing state wiretapping laws that essentially say you can't record an officer conducting his duties. And now they're taking people to jail for the act of recording government officials in public places performing their public service. In the United States, this is happening. I don't know that anything in particular can be done about it, but it's just another useful thing to be aware of, maybe an additional data point in your analysis of the rightness or wrongness of the state. But if I'm ever accosted by the police, I think the most comforting thing that could possibly happen would be if three or four people from a safe distance started to tape the encounter. And I myself am not all of that demographically susceptible to police violence. So I imagine somebody who is part of a population that is fairly routinely savaged by the police and falsely imprisoned because of supposed interactions with police, I think they probably would especially appreciate a few cameras rolling during police encounters. To touch on the state surveillance that I was mentioning before, in these encounters in which people are beaten or killed, the strange thing is that state surveillance never seems to be appropriately positioned, or the cameras are out of tape, or they were somehow switched off. Invariably, this is the case. I've never seen incriminating evidence provided by a police camera. And so, citizen filming of state agents is essentially the only way that the truth will ever be known about encounters between cops and citizenry. And that is the last, or the closing note here, that is the grounding of the value of filming cops, filming government officials in general, is that it is really the only way to access the truth. A visual record, modulo Photoshop, cannot be altered. It can't be lied about. That's the kind of reality we talk about as being so important here on the Bytecast. And since this is a standalone show, I wanted to put a plug in for a website that spends basically full time on this called CopBlock. CopBlock.com, I think. And this website essentially just collects together stories of police abuse, news articles, and video. As always, if you have questions or comments, stop by jaddavis.com, jad-davis.com. I look forward to reading them. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time.